What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin, one of your two co-hosts, as always, and I'm here with my co-host Roy slash R. Jacob Honeybrook. What's up, dude?
What's going on, Kevin? Did you see old Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow?
Come again?
Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog, he saw his shadow.
Never heard him referred to as that, but okay.
And what do you call him?
The groundhog?
He's Punxsutawney Phil from Punxsutawney, PA.
All right.
Well, regardless, we got 6 more weeks of cranking our hogs. So.
Fuck. Dude, it's a wild, been a wild weekend here in Charleston. I was telling you off air, we got fucking snow. Like, you guys are bleeding into our territory.
Welcome to Ohio. We're taking over the entire country.
No, see, I'm not supposed to deal with that until later this week.
Oh, yeah, because you'll be in Ohio.
I will be in Ohio.
What's going on there?
What?
This sounds horribly staged. Well, what are you going to be doing in Ohio, Kevin? Midnight Terrors podcast.
That is not a promo. Wait,
keep
Midnight Terrors. Midnight Terrors, what'd you say?
I said this sounds like a terrible radio promo. Hey, Kevin, what are you going to be doing in Ohio? Midnight Terrors 88.7. Keep it locked.
Oh, 88.7. I was like, what was that last part after?
Oh,
Midnight
sorry.
Terrors podcast.
That was a radio station I worked for back in the day.
Okay, fair enough. No, we are not.
Yeah.
No, we are not jumping into a promo, although we will later on. But welcome back to another episode of the Midnight Terrors podcast, everybody. And it is a big week over at Midnight Terrors because as we're recording this on Monday, February 2nd, Roy and I are just a few days from me being in Ohio again for our live shows in Columbus for what Roy dubbed the Columbus Carnage Tour. I love that fucking name now.
Oh, thank you. I came up with that at about 3 a.m. on 0 hours of sleep.
Okay, well, 0 hours of sleep and 3 a.m. Nothing more, nothing less to come up with badass tour names.
That's when I usually function. That's when I write all my books, and it's usually in a shack in the middle of nowhere.
Fair enough. But yeah, dude, we're here with another episode. We are just coming off the heels of the good old return of the good old DR Kane for our Sinister episode. That was a fun one.
Always fun to have DR Kane, somebody on my mental capacity.
Yes.
And by that, I mean brain damaged.
Fair enough. By the way, for that last episode, y'all, as I mentioned in the episode, I did link to DR's new book in the description of that episode. So please be sure to go support him and pick up a copy.
All That We Destroy out now.
Yes. And it's a, you know, probably a coincidental follow up in some way, but also like it just made sense. Roy, we're back. Like I said, we're a couple days out from our first show in Columbus, Ohio. And we're headed to Noctera Brewing for that one in the Powell location, which is a reportedly haunted building.
Yes.
According to the staff that we have talked to, they've been absolutely lovely. But they've filled us in about the stories from that brewery. And, you know, coming off of talking some ghosty stuff with DR Kane and then building into our first live show in Columbus, which is ghost themed. We circled back around to a movie pick of mine for this next episode that'll come out the Wednesday before those shows so we can have this be the final promo push. But it was my choice again, and I went with a movie that I had never seen before now, but had always had on my radar, like going way back years ago, you know, definitely in the heyday of the ghost and the found footage stuff. But we're here to talk about 2011's cult classic, I guess we could call this. It does have a cult following.
It does.
But 2011's cult classic, Grave Encounters.
Grave Encounters of the Third Kind. That should have been, if they had made this into a trilogy, that would have needed to be the title of the third one.
Oh, that'd be so funny. But yeah, this was one, man, that we've talked about this a lot, but the early 2010s was a heyday for ghost movies and found footage movies. And this one, I remember seeing this cover for Grave Encounters, like it must have been either at Blockbuster or at Walmart, but I saw this title and this poster and DVD cover everywhere around that time.
For me, it was number two. I remember always going on Netflix and seeing Grave Encounters 2. So when I typed it in, I almost clicked on the second one, thinking like, oh, that's just Grave Encounters.
Yeah, I could see that. That cover, I think, is also pretty recognizable. But like you said, even on streaming, man, this movie's popped up a lot, in my time on streaming as well. But I'd never seen it. And as we're headed into a ghost-themed live event on Friday, I figured, why not check out Grave Encounters for the first time? And so, yeah, this is my first watch. Had you seen this then or up until now?
No.
Okay. Did you know anything about it?
No. I like I said, I had just seen the title card for the second one on Netflix, but I don't know what I thought it was. I think I had an idea it was kind of like the VHS movies, but I had just never really looked into it. But was it worth the wait for you?
I feel like had I watched this like 10 years ago, I probably would have loved it a lot more. That being said, I still liked it. So was it worth the wait to answer your question? Yes. I thought it was actually a pretty fun movie, with some flaws. You know, we've said that about a few movies that are, you know, no movie's perfect, obviously, but can it give me a fun ride? And with this one, I wanted, you know, just a fun found footage ghost movie, because I always have a soft spot for those. You know, I do not dabble or mess with this stuff at all. You know, I'm very aware of not wanting to do that ever. But I did, you know, watch a lot of ghost shows back in the day, like A Haunting. I didn't really watch like Ghost Adventures or anything like that. The ones where it's just like, oh, what was that? And you have never seen anything.
Yeah,
Like,
dude, I love The Haunting. We would watch that every
yes.
day in college at 3 o'clock. It was amazing.
Yes, A Haunting.
With the ghost hunting shows, dude, I like those. Ghost Adventures was always fun with Zach and his giant ego. And then just recently I've been cool with the guys from Haunted Discoveries. They're like half historians, half ghost hunters, so they give you a lot of history about these places and they're just really cool guys, and I really enjoy their show. But oh no, I just wrote The Honeycutt before this. It's one of those things, like having worked in television. I know, but I love how I'm just giving my resume today. Wow, radio station I
You
worked
wanna
at
you're talking about ego from Zach on
was
Ghost
now
Adventures,
fucking
and you're
great.
like,
I am.
let me talk about my ego.
Yeah, but just having worked in TV, I just realized how much of it is just for entertainment. So.
Oh yeah.
That's a disclaimer from me.
Yeah, no, that's
But that doesn't make it
always
any less of a good show or anything. Like, I still eat that shit up. Like, especially around Halloween. Yeah, I want to watch A Haunting. I want to watch Ghost
yeah.
Adventures. Heck, fuck yeah.
No, that's always how I look at it. Like, that's my intent is, and always has been my intent, is just entertainment. You know, ghost stories are always have a flair of fun to them.
And it's
And
cool just to learn about the places like Bobby Mackey's. You hear about like a bunch of outlaws
yes.
hanging out in there and shooting each other. Like, that's
Yeah,
really cool,
the historical element is really cool too, for
man.
sure. But yeah, man, you know, I would watch A Haunting, Paranormal State, My Ghost Story Caught on Camera, I watched for a little bit.
Dude, I have Paranormal State. That was the people from Penn State, right?
Yes.
So I have 1 degree of separation from there. My best friend from high school, his brother, was friends with a girl who was on that show named Heather Taddy. I think she did the camera work or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, she went to high school with us. So
Nice.
again, here I am giving my resume. Let me pick up that name. But no, she was always really cool. And I
No,
remember
you're giving
whenever.
somebody else's resume.
Yeah. I'm riding somebody else's coattails other
Yeah,
than yours. So when that show came out and she was on it was just like, damn, that's really cool that she's a part of that.
no, that is cool. But yeah, you know, again, the 2000s and definitely the early 2010s, around the time of those Paranormal Activity sequels and the Conjuring films, lots of ghost stories going around. Or paranormal stuff, whatever. And this one I feel like was one that I don't think I ever knew anyone who watched it, but I would hear about it like on, you know, still kind of the early days of the internet where people would talk about how scary it was. That's why I say, like, had I watched it maybe 10, 15 years ago, I probably would have like really gravitated towards it because that's what I was watching at the time in horror. But I still found this one to be fun.
You know what I like are the real out there monster and ghost hunting shows like Mountain Monsters. Did you ever see that with the rednecks down in West Virginia?
No, but I watched the closest thing I watched to that was, did you ever watch Monster Quest?
Oh yeah, I remember that show. That's old school.
Yeah, I would watch that in that vein.
I always like the stuff where they hunt Bigfoot or Loch Ness. It's like, well, you know they're not going to find this thing because it probably would have been in the papers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I
Hey, we
feel like
found
well,
Bigfoot.
I feel like the originator of that was and it wasn't all ghost or creature stuff, but Unsolved Mysteries back in the day.
Yes, what a great show. My mom would always love watching that, and I would just be terrified.
I was gonna say, man, if it was 11 o'clock at night and you heard that piano theme song, man, you
Yeah.
knew it was gonna get scary.
She would watch that and I'd be terrified, and my dad would watch the X-Files and I'd be terrified. I was a real wimp of a kid.
But yeah, man, I'm excited to finally talk about this one. It was a fun watch. What are your initial reactions? Because you normally will text me like, oh yeah, that was kind of fun, or this was weird, or whatever. I'm going in completely blind here because you, I believe, just watched this a little bit earlier today, right?
I finished it up about an hour ago, so yes.
Okay, so very, very fresh and raw reactions. Initial thoughts?
So there's some parts I like about it. For example, that it's a ghost hunting TV show. I think that's a really cool spin on the whole found footage deal to make it into a TV show. That being said, I found it very formulaic of the
Oh, for
found
sure, yeah.
footage. Maybe it doesn't really do a whole lot other than the premise to set itself apart. So, I mean, I thought it was a perfectly serviceable movie. You know, not everything has to be a groundbreaking masterpiece. I thought this was decent for what it was.
Yeah, for sure. I would give it probably like a 7.
Okay, I was thinking like 5 or 6, very, very middle road.
Lowest I would go would be a 6, I think.
6. Do I hear 5? Do I hear 4?
I think that for
Sold, we're giving
me,
it a 2.
as we get into it, the ending execution is a little hokey.
Oh, see, I like the last half of this.
No, I don't dislike it, but I like it definitely feels like something out of a different movie
It's
as
definitely
things.
campy.
Yeah.
When he finds all the shit in the basement or whatever.
And just the ending shot, like we'll talk about it, but yeah, it feels very like disjointed, whereas the
Okay.
first half feels very like Paranormal Activity.
I see what you're saying.
So, which I don't think I've ever asked you, are you a fan of the Paranormal Activities? I used to be like back in the day. They're so hard to go back and watch now, man. They're so boring.
It's a real phenomena where I feel like if you were in a theater and you saw those, it was a whole experience because you're freaking out with a whole group of people. But I watched one or two of them on my own, and I'm just like, God, how many
No,
fucking scenes do I need to see of somebody asleep?
see, man, I never watched any of them in a theater. Like, I rented the first one
Really?
from Blockbuster, watched it a bunch. It scared the crap out of me. And then from there on, like, I would pick them up on DVD to watch them at home. I think I saw everyone except for like the last two.
I think too. This is one of the last movies like Blair Witch to do it, but they didn't really tell you this shit was fake. Like, if you went in not knowing much about it and you thought you were watching people's, like, ring cam footage of their bedrooms, like, this would have been horrifying.
Which one? Paranormal Activity?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. They it was
Right?
a
I
bit.
could be wrong, but, like, they were kind of marketing it, like, hey, this is, like, Fourth
Yeah,
Kind.
it
They
was.
marketed that, like, this is real alien footage. That's why I couldn't sleep for, like, a night.
I think so. They definitely it was a big deal when Paranormal Activity came out. I remember hearing
Oh,
people in
yeah.
high school talk about how scary that was.
Well, I think I told you I wasn't at the premiere. Again, not dropping my resume. But I was across the street from the premiere in New York City of Paranormal Activity.
Crazy.
And I was in line for a concert, Black Label Society, Clutch, and Children of Bodom. Anyway.
Damn, that's a good show.
Oh my God, yeah. And
That
what's really
one you can flex.
okay, what's really crazy is I met one of my best friends in Ohio a couple years back, and recently we're just bullshitting. I bring up, like, oh yeah, I saw a Black Label with clutching Bodom. He was like, dude, I saw that tour when it was out here. I'm like, I saw it in New York.
That's
But
cool, dude.
anyway, yes, but anyway, the moral of the story is I was across the street from the Paranormal Activity begging for money. And I just, dude, the line to see this movie, like down and around the New York block, it was crazy the hype behind these.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see from production notes where Grave Encounters falls here. So do we want to get into those? Because I feel like this is definitely riding the wave of the, especially 2011. That was like
That was like a
terror.
year after.
Well, the first one was, I believe, got a wide release in like 09. And
Yeah.
then they did one in 2010, and then 2011. So this was around the time of Paranormal Activity 3. Like I said, I was a fan of those for a while. So,
Yeah. I
but
mean, I feel like the first couple, there was just so much hype behind all of them.
oh yeah, for sure.
Couldn't
So
escape it. I
no,
tried.
you actually couldn't. So I'm interested to see what you found out about Grave Encounters and how this came to be.
Some actually pretty interesting stuff.
Okay.
So, I think we've already gone over the plot, but I've started including these in the production notes as I kind of have a seizure. 2011 Canadian film about a ghost hunting team that is filming an episode that would be the series finale. And they lock themselves in an old asylum, but then it turns out they actually can't escape. So.
Oh, dude, you could not pay me enough to spend the night in an abandoned psychiatric hospital. And you know what's funny is just the other day I got a Facebook ad for something that not Penn State, that Pennhurst Asylum was hosting, and then I just so happened to be watching this. I was like, man, it sounds interesting, but scary as shit what Pennhurst Asylum does.
I ran out of Pennhurst Asylum.
I'm sure, dude, it looks fucking scary just by the building.
I think I've said this before. I don't want to repeat myself, so I'll keep it brief. But we were there for a haunted attraction thing, and it was so much scarier without all the Halloween stuff. Like when we were just walking through the darkened parts, like outside, and you'd see the playground equipment or like the old buildings in the background and in the distance, it was so much more unsettling than any kind of like mad doctor setup. But anyway, at the end, I was there with my girlfriend back then, and there was this big monster that would come out of the wall at the end and try to get you. And she was walking behind me. And I see this big thing like go back into the wall, so I just sprint past it, and she's trying to
Oh.
keep up with me, but it grabs her.
Oh, you
Dude,
dirty bastard.
oh, I got such an earful when we got out of there. She's like, "You bastard! How could you let that thing get me?" And you just ran away. I'm like, "Yeah, well, gotta be quicker, gotta be
Wow.
sneaky."
That's fucked.
Every man for himself. I'm not getting eaten by a monster in a wall. Get out of here.
Jeez.
Don't have time for that.
Yeah, we don't have an asylum here, but the closest thing to something like that is we have our haunted jail, the old city jail downtown, which I've
Okay.
gone to a few times. Every single time there's something weird that happens.
I think you've told me about that. We had a jail outside of Philly. I think it was called Eastern State Penitentiary. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
So that one was always really haunted, but I saw an Instagram reel about this place that I used to live at. So York, Pennsylvania, it's like right on the border with Maryland. But around York is a place called Hellam, you know, like Hellam. And just living around there, you always heard about this place called the Seven Gates of Hell. And apparently what it was in the 1800s, turn of the century, there was a mental asylum back there. And as the story goes, the inmates got loose, burned the place down, and a bunch of them ran out into the woods. And now there's allegedly seven gates back there, and people have gone out, they've gone missing, they've called for help, like that nobody's made it past the third or fourth gate or something. Supposedly the seventh one leads you into, like, who knows, maybe hell itself. But yeah, that was a place I lived near but just did not want to go.
No, thank you. I'm good on that.
Yeah, that's not my
Anyway.
thing. I talk about this stuff, I don't experiment.
No, not at all. Me neither. But anyway, I didn't mean to derail you. So what did you find out about the production of Grave Encounters?
Okay. So this was simultaneously released in theaters and video on demand. And even though it only had a limited theatrical release, this thing made $5 million on a $120,000 budget, which is
That
like
is
unheard of.
bank, dude. Like,
And keep in mind, limited theatrical release, and it made that much.
yeah, man, what can I say? You know, again, ghost movies were hot at the time, and I'm sure people were itching. I mean, I would have been. I'm sure people were itching for the next Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess if you can sell your shit to like a video on demand company, that's got to be a good chunk of change. You know, what's Netflix paying for WWE Raw? Like 500 million a year? It's stupid money. Like, I can't even comprehend that.
Yeah, very, very, very profitable movie. I didn't realize it was Canadian until I looked at the Wikipedia.
Good eye, mate. The
Don't
reason.
I don't think that's accurate.
Sorry, I gotta summon my inner Chris Jericho. A boot again.
Okay.
A. All right, so the reason that this took place as a ghost hunting show is because the filmmakers were like, we want to make a found footage film. But why the fuck would these people be filming the entire time? Like, how can we make that make sense? So they landed on the idea to make it a ghost hunting show, which we had already discussed, were also pretty popular around that time.
Again, I think we dove into that pretty well at the beginning of the podcast.
So this really hit it from two fronts. Hey, we're going to be a found footage ghost flick, and we're going to be a ghost hunting show.
Pretty much, yeah, man.
Good idea.
I it actually kind of surprises me that this wasn't like a bigger phenomenon, but I guess, you know, promotional wise.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to like this thing had a budget of $120,000. How much marketing can you do? It really reminds me of without all the crazy roadblocks and stuff, it reminds me a lot of the production behind Scarecrows. How that was not seen in theaters, but when it went to video stores and stuff, that it is where it made its money. Allegedly, I mean, that Wikipedia was like, this is what the filmmakers
No,
say
dude, I oh,
it made.
that'd be
Yeah,
so
we made
sad if they
about a
were like
cool 4 million. Really, they made $4.
oh, that'd be
Sold it to
so
their cousin
sad.
Jimmy down the block.
Oh, that'd be so sad. But yeah, I definitely feel like this found its footing, and because Blockbuster was still around, they were definitely like on their last legs, but I
Yeah.
feel like this found its footing like in the DVD release at Walmart or in Blockbuster or Redbox probably. And that's probably more so where the cult following came from, more so than, hey, did you see this in theaters? So.
I wonder if we're missing out on more movies like this. And Hatchet, I know, also has a similar story of finding, because that's where we found Hatchet, was it a family video? Anyway, I wonder how many cult classics we're kind of missing out on, because when you'd go to the video store, it's a totally different ball game when you're like, okay, I can maybe rent one or two movies. This cover looks really cool. Let me do that one. As opposed to going on Tubi and you have 5,000 movies about ghosts and just skip by most of them.
That's how I found out about Terrifier was my friends and I just rented it on Redbox and we're like, oh, this looks cool. It's got a cool clown on it. And then like we had no idea what we were getting into. By the way, quick side note, we were talking about like potential box office bombs. Obviously, Grave Encounters was not, but I heard about this on another podcast. I guess there was a movie in the 90s called Trojan War with Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I remember them saying how big of a bomb this was, and I double checked on Wikipedia to verify. Budget was $15 million, and it made $309 at the box office.
$309.
$309.
There's no way that there's no way I can be right.
That's what Wikipedia says. So, like, six people saw the movie.
Yeah. That's got to be like 300,000 or 3 million or
Nope.
something.
Look it up on Wikipedia.
$300.
$309.
God, it's like they put it out for an hour and had to pull it.
Exactly.
Oh, this is actually shit, so just kidding about the whole theater release.
Oh, that's so funny.
Wow.
Anyway, production notes.
Yes, so Grave Encounters was actually filmed at the Riverview Hospital. It was a mental institute in British Columbia, up in Canada. The hospital, not Britain. The hospital has served as a location for a number of television and film productions, so I went to look up what all has been filmed at this place, and it's pretty historic in the world of entertainment. So, movies and TV shows that have been filmed at this place: Watchmen, Supernatural, The X-Files, Arrow, Elf, Smallville, Happy Gilmore, Butterfly Effect, and the biggest one was the ending of Deadpool 2 with the final battle. That all happens at this place
Ah,
on its like center lawn.
that's crazy.
Right? I never even heard of this place.
No.
But yeah, pretty historic in the world of TV and film.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm gonna praise for sure about the movie is that you kind of can't go wrong with like a psychiatric hospital as your backdrop for your horror movie. It's kind of a creepy place in general, so
We just saw it with Viggy Parhampton in Ha Haunted House
I
Hill. I can never say the goddamn title.
House on Haunted Hill.
Yes,
It's confusing
that
as
one.
shit because we did The Haunting of Hill House, but then
Yes.
there's House on Haunted Hill, like which is like backwards.
Yes. Maybe that's
But
where I'm getting it.
you better believe that when I watched this yesterday and I realized what was happening, I was like, "Oh, this also would have been a good option for us to discuss with Viggy."
I know. They even straight up say they were doing lobotomies in there.
Yep.
All right. So, as we talked about, Grave Encounters 2 has a cult following. It even has a sequel, Grave Encounters 2, that was released just in 2012, so the year after.
Boy, they cranked that shit out.
Well, I feel like it's a lot. I feel like these type of movies are a lot like we say about local news. Basically, it's cheap, it's easy to make, and you can build a brand off of it. And it seems like that applies to found footage ghost movies as well.
What did you look to see what the premise of the sequel was by chance?
It started playing after the first one, but I turned it off.
Very similar premise to Blair Witch 2, where it
Dude,
is
I
fans of
thought.
the it is fans of the movie that are wondering if Grave Encounters was real and go to the same location.
I fucking knew it was gonna do that because the little bit I did see, it had like all these people on YouTube reviewing the first movie. I'm like, motherfuckers are gonna pull a Blair Witch 2, aren't they?
They did, yeah. Which actually kind of seems like a positive in my mind, so I might need to check it out.
God, that's wow. Perfect. Perfect.
There you
We need to
go.
do this next week.
That's what happens when you do a sequel to a found footage movie, is you make it a movie within a movie, I guess.
It's like, ah, shit, we can't do that found footage again. We have to make a real movie.
No, I think that one is a found footage movie still.
Still the second one?
Yeah.
Ah, perfect. All right. Grave Encounters 1 has a 6.1 on IMDb, 65 on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 6.7 user score on Metacritic. So pretty much what we were saying. We seem to have the voice in the ear of the people who also watched Grave Encounters.
To be honest, I thought it was going to be lower when I was watching the movie because I didn't really pay attention to the scores until I watched it. So I honestly thought people were going to shit on it more and be like, "Man, this is a Paranormal Activity ripoff."
Yeah, I think it does enough different that
It
it was
does.
able to stand on its own without being spectacular.
It does. And yeah, it definitely at points is like a paint by numbers, found footage horror movie,
Right.
but I do think it has a lot of good things going for it, like the setting of the psychiatric hospital, the backdrop of it being like an actual ghost show, which leads me to criticize these characters as time goes on and be like, wow, this Lance Preston dude is an idiot.
I've worked
So,
here a day. Well, can you say you worked here longer and saw some shit?
jeez, man. But yeah, I do think there's a lot we're gonna praise here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the characters I thought were pretty entertaining, But yeah, looking at it as a whole, that's it for production notes, by the way, brought to you by Things I Read Online. But looking
Sweet.
at it as a whole, it is very formulaic and paint by numbers, and you kind of have like the establishment of everything. Then it's people walking around for about a half hour, 45 minutes, little paranormal things are happening, and then the last half to the last act are just like shit goes bonkers.
I actually feel like they could have probably made it a little bit shorter. When I saw that it was 90 minutes, I'm like, oh, this might have some pacing issues. It's actually pretty decently paced.
I love that's the first thing you thought when you saw the runtime.
Because it's hard to do a found footage thing for 90 minutes. So,
God, could you imagine like a 2.5 hour found footage?
no. But I
They're still
actually,
walking around.
jeez. But I actually feel like the pacing in this is pretty solid. You know, it's about 15, 20 minutes in, and then we're in the asylum, or
Hey,
hospital, whatever we call it.
this is something I just thought of too, because people said the pacing was horrible with this movie, but I feel like it's a good time to bring it up, and it just popped into my head, and I've long lost my filter. But you're playing through WWE 2K25, right? The story
Yeah.
mode. So I'd beat it once, and I went back, and I was doing a different path, and CM Punk drops a mention of that horror movie he was in, The Girl on the Third Floor, or whatever. Do you remember that?
No, I haven't seen him do that yet, but that's funny.
I think it was like a Netflix movie, probably like 2017 or 18. But you say something to him, and he's like, "Oh, this is worse than that time I moved into the haunted house with that girl on the third floor." I'm like, "Son of a
That's
bitch,
so dumb. That's funny.
remember that."
All right. Well, let's walk through what we can of the plot. Obviously, when you do a found footage movie, it's pretty straightforward plot. It's just a lot of scares.
Oh, I have like five notes on this.
I still took a good chunk.
Okay.
But we start off the movie and we're introduced to actually the producer of Grave Encounters, Jerry Hartfield. Which don't get me wrong, I don't remember everybody's name off the top of my head. I'm just reading from Wikipedia to make sure I know who I'm talking about.
Dude, you think I remember any of these people's names?
we actually have, I think I wrote Brandon Paxton in my notes initially when I was trying to think of Lance Preston, who's like the main guy.
Good old Brandon Paxton.
And then I was like, that doesn't seem right.
Brandon Paxton, love that fucking guy. I remember this time on Broad Street with him.
But they do open up with kind of a cool frame story. We meet the series producer of Grave Encounters, Jerry Hartfield, who introduces us to what the show was, how excited he was about this being a successful up and coming show, and like how ghost shows are all the rage. And then I do like the hook of then we got to episode 6, which would be their last episode. This was kind of cool.
Kind of ahead of its time too, because I know we've mentioned this stuff on here before, but like analog horror and lost media that's really taken off in like the past decade or so. And this was kind of doing that. What I mean, I'm sure you could go back to the fucking 80s and be like, oh, Poltergeist was kind of analog horror and stuff, but I don't know. This one feels a little ahead of its time in that aspect.
Yeah, a little bit. So then we cut to the broadcast. I do like that he says none of this has been altered. It's just been edited for time. Because otherwise it'd be, I mean, you know, it's such a nitpicky thing, but if you were to be like, why is this presented like a movie? You know, he actually does say, like, no, this was edited for time. So I actually thought that was kind of a nice detail to tie that together.
Could you imagine if they just had the raw footage of like 12 hours overnight in the asylum?
Yeah, they got to the point.
Yeah, they I trust me, I much prefer this than to 12 hours of security footage.
Yes. But so we start off and we meet the Grave Encounters crew, which is Ghost Hunter Lance. We also have, I didn't catch that she was an occult specialist, but we have Sasha, I think is how they say her name. It's written like Sasha, but I think it's pronounced Sasha.
I kind of like Sasha better than Sasha.
Yeah, but I didn't catch that she was an occult specialist, but that's what Wikipedia says. Then they had
Yeah,
the.
I think I remember them saying something, because if you remember at the one part, she's sitting like in that room saying, "If you can hear me," and she has like stones or something.
True, true. But then we meet the camera operator whose name is Matt. Or no, that's the surveillance operator, whatever he is. He's like another equipment guy. Then we have cameraman
He's a
TC.
red shirt.
Yes. That's actually not too inaccurate because he is the first to go. But yeah, we have another tech guy or surveillance operator, Matt. We have the cameraman TC. And we have, according to Wikipedia, I thought he might actually be kind of real, but I guess not. Fake psychic medium, Houston. Who's
Oh,
like the
yeah.
kind of older guy that was really like playing it up for the camera?
God, I can't believe there's that many characters in this.
Yeah.
They're kind of forgettable.
Yeah, they are. That would be one of the like things I would kind of critique is that these characters are pretty plastic.
The host is good because he's like this charismatic kind of douchebag guy.
Yeah.
Sasha is pretty cool. And the fucking psychic guy.
I thought TC was entertaining when he got going later in
Oh,
the movie.
yeah. Was he like the Brooklyn guy?
Yes.
Yeah, I did like him. Okay, so we got four solid
Yeah,
characters.
where he's like, "You're gonna get me in trouble with my girl."
I just remember the one point he's like, Houston, do we have a problem?
Yeah, Matt was pretty like bland.
Very mattish.
But he also doesn't really get to do anything. They literally leave him behind to sit and watch the monitors.
That's what I would want to do if I was ever part of a ghost hunting team. Like, you guys go inside, I'll be in the van checking stuff out. Maybe
But I
eating a McDonald's
actually,
burger.
right. But I actually feel like this setup where they first introduce the hospital, which according to again Wikipedia, because I can't remember all the details, Collingwood Psychiatric Hospital. They go here. They've had their first five episodes. They go to investigate. I kind of like this opening where they're just doing shots of the hospital and they're talking to like a local historian and then. They literally pay off the gardener to invent like a spooky story. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's the guy. It's like, I've been here one day.
Yeah. And they're like, just make something up. Here's $20.
Yeah, I dug how they set it up like an actual ghost show. It doesn't just start off with them doing the investigation. Like, we're getting the history, we're interviewing the people that work there.
Yeah, but I also do think it actually is kind of self-aware of like some of the ghost shows at the time where like. They will probably catch stuff, but like most of the time you're watching probably not much.
Right.
So they have to dramatize it a little bit, you know? So I kind of liked the little self-aware like wink at the camera with like just make something up.
It made me think back. I don't think I brought this up, but on Sinister, I apparently bought it because I had like it was available to watch, and I had like all the specials, and the one was like this murder house Sinister was somewhat based on, and there was like an axe murder in there in like the 1910s. But anyway, you know, they're going around, they're interviewing the people that work there. And the one guy standing next to the door to the attic, he's like, yeah, we think the guy hit up here with the axe. And as he's explaining the story, the attic door just closes.
Ooh,
It's like, whoa.
creepy. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like this little frame story here, and it's definitely of the time. Like, it kind of feels nostalgic now, looking back. Like, man, this was everywhere for a while. You know, and them talking about like the setup is cool. Of like, townspeople have you know heard screams or seen people walk in the halls at night, and then just them doing the tour of like they find the one like looks like a isolation room, like a solitary confinement room with all the writing on it. And then walking the halls and shit. And the setup of like, oh, if you guys think it's dark now where all the cells are, like wait till the sun goes down. And we get a little bit of a frame story here, where they talk about Dr. Arthur Friedkin, who performed experiments and lobotomies unethically on patients before the patients killed him. That's why I said earlier, like this would have been a perfect movie to discuss with Viggy as well.
Yes, but his death was overshadowed by that of Babe Ruth.
That was funny. Oh, that's so crazy. Like, oh yeah, we have the death of the hospital like doctor, or we have Babe Ruth.
Right, who gives a fuck about that guy? The Babe died.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that
But
a
they're
nickname of Babe Ruth? Because I think I just gave it to him if it's not.
no idea, man. You'd have to do some digging on that one. But these characters are gonna stay through the night at the hospital for 8 hours. And Kenny, the caretaker, says he'll let them out at 6 a.m. the next day, which actually ends up being an important detail, which I kinda liked. We'll talk about it as we get going. But you know, again, the characters are a little whatever. But I kind of like the setup and I like, you know, these little moments where like like, oh, they say that a girl like committed suicide right there in that bathtub, and they're all just looking at the bathtub. Then there's the writing like in the confinement room or whatever. And you know, I think they're kind of made to be that way. Like they're like Lance Preston, the head guy, is very much in this for money. And I'm just writing like, man, these characters are naive as can be. They're laughing literally at the idea of finding spirits.
Yeah, until you find one you don't want to see.
Yeah, and again, about 15, 20 minutes in, you know, that time lapse shot happens, which I kind of like again how TC's like, you want to get a time lapse shot?
Yeah, I did find that pretty cool.
Like, I just liked the idea of this, like, this is their process of filming. And that's, I actually think, one of the things that's pretty unique about the movie.
Yeah, I love the whole TV aspect of it because it's, well, I think I said that with Late Night with the Devil too. I dig this stuff, and anytime you can kind of pull the curtain back and see how it's all made is fun, even though it's fiction. Like, it's still fun to see.
Yeah. But you know, it's kind of a series of scares there for a while. I think it is a good bit though before the first real thing happens, because they're all just sitting around, you know, wandering around. Again, like the hallway shots though, like where all the cells are, like, couldn't pay me enough to wander those halls at night. I would just do what Matt's doing and stay in one room.
And keep in mind, it's real too. They shot this in a real asylum, so.
Which is gonna lead to actually something pretty impressive later, because later on the asylum is like changing. Like the layout is changing and they run into walls and they can't go out certain doors anymore. Considering they shot this all like in a practical set, it actually looks pretty good when they start doing that stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can't tell they'd messed with it or anything. But that is a solid trope we don't see too much of, and I think it works really well with psychological horror, where you might be in a house and all of a sudden a door that was there is gone, or this hallway is suddenly a dead end or whatever. I guess that'd be the same thing, but you know, just the changing layout, I think we could see a little bit more of.
Yeah, I was gonna
Because,
say
dude,
that's.
they do that in Silent Hill too at the end. Like, you used to go through these doors and they'd lead one place, but now you're going through a door and coming out on the totally opposite side of this old hotel. So I think that was a really cool thing that always stuck out to me.
Yeah, and I was gonna say that's another thing I praise about it. It actually is that the movie actually does become pretty psychological in nature as the time goes on, to the point that we're actually gonna see Lance break down like completely in his psyche by the end of the movie.
Yeah. I was gonna say we see that deterioration of the character's mental state, which plays into the whole asylum thing. So, well
For
done,
sure.
Grave Encounter. You know what? Fuck it. 6 out of 10.
Yeah, there's some good writing here, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, but then, you know, we wait a little while for the first scare, and it kind of goes into standard territory of the first real scare. You know, there's a certain room where they said the window often gets left open at night when no one's there and it feels like something's trying to get out or whatever. Again, you know, kind of typical with like, oh, there's like the static on the camera when Matt or whoever leaves the room, because they send Matt to go check all the cameras and set them up in all the different locations.
Would not want to do that by myself.
No, and that's gonna bite him in the ass later.
Yeah.
I did like also, I think you were saying you liked the Houston character, how much he was playing up the psychic
Oh
stuff.
yeah. Was his name Houston? Was I not paying attention when you
No,
read
his
the name?
name is Houston, yeah.
Jesus. Of course it is.
But I like how kind of campy he is, where like
I know.
he's not a believer at all, but he's just like, you know, we want to speak to you, make yourself known. Ah, was that pretty good, man? Thought that was pretty good. Like, it was so shitty of a character, but it was pretty funny.
My favorite part of his is whenever Sasha gets her hair messed with, and he says something like, "Great Scott, spirits!
Yes.
I command you to stop."
So crazy. Yeah, he's very over the top. It's pretty fun though.
Is, yeah, I like that character. He's kind of like the comedic relief.
At one point, yes, and then later TC is gonna be the comedic relief,
Yeah.
I feel like. But yeah, we get some static in the camera just after midnight. They kind of give you this cool thing where the camera is laid out where you can see the time every time they cut away. Or you can see the like recording time start to go AWOL later.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good touch.
But then the first real scare happens. TC's walking around and he's looking at the tiles on the floor and saying funny things like, "Checkers of the dead, king me, bitch." Or he walks into the kitchen, he's like, "Kitchen of the dead, I said cook my dinner, bitch." And then
Is
it's followed.
that when he gets a call from his girl or whatever, and he's like, "Oh, hey, baby."
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's right after. But you know, just some funny comedic relief. It is right after that, yeah, because he gets the call and we see a long shot of a wheelchair sitting in the hallway.
Oh, that fucking thing. Oh.
Yeah, and then the wheelchair starts moving while he's talking to his family about like there are no monsters, talking to his kid.
Yeah. There are some good, like later in the movie, there's some good like ghosts and stuff, but initially, like the subtlety of what they're doing, pretty good.
Yeah. And then we get our first real jump scare with again a door slam with TC, and that actually got me pretty good, I'm not gonna lie.
This movie does a lot of cool things with doors.
It
One of my
does.
favorite parts involves a door near the end.
Okay. I have a feeling I know what you're talking about. But later on, they're all kind of investigating, trying to see like was TC full of shit, but he also hasn't caught on camera. Which I think is kind of cool because they're, again, they're a TV crew, so they're recording everything, so they have all their footage, so they
Yeah.
can just go back and go like, "Are you making this up?" But no, they can see it. You know?
And it is crazy how ghosts or spirits or whatever can really come through in energy. Like we might not be able to see them with our naked eye, but then you see something on a motion camera or whatever, and there's like an outline there. I don't know. Just always fascinated me.
Oh, dude, they're gonna do something with that later that I think is like super cool. One of the more effective shots of the movie, actually. But they're investigating the room where the door slammed, and there's another jump scare that again got me really good. I think it's the stretcher falling over,
Oh.
and it lets out a loud bang, and man, it creeped me out when that happened. And then, very subtle, but you can kind of hear some creaking in the floor above them, and they're like, "Matt, is anyone in the upstairs?" And of course, we know there's nobody upstairs.
Right, but that doesn't stop them from going up. We have a permit.
I thought that was funny too.
I think that also plays into how skeptical at least a few of them are because, you would think if you're locked in this asylum and you're hearing footsteps and you're hunting ghosts, you would assume, oh, maybe that's some kind of spirit up there. They just automatically assume it's some like drifter or whatever up there.
I know, right?
So it kind of shows they don't really believe what they're selling, I think.
Yeah, but then you know, Houston also tries to actually commune with the spirits, and so does Sasha with the EVP thing. And right as she's listening, this was a nice misdirect. You expect you're going to hear something on the EVP, and she's like, "Show yourself to us, say something." And as we're listening to that static, that's when her hair gets pulled.
Yeah.
That was a nice little misdirect, I thought.
That was effective.
But then. One of my favorite touches in the movie is at one point, they're all having pictures taken, and like Lance is having pictures of him taken. And we're hearing his voice go, "If there is a ghost behind me, you'll know once they're developed." But we're seeing the photos after they've disappeared.
Oh,
And
yeah.
the photos are dated later on, and we can see ghost handprints. And a smoky figure and orbs after the
Yeah.
fact. So in his mind, there's nothing there. But we're seeing it later, like, oh shit, there's something in the room. I thought that was brilliant.
Dude, that's why. Yeah, that was really good. And that's why I'm afraid to, like do a sound record of you snoring or whatever to see if there's anything going on, because I'm just like, what if I see something there, like see my closet door open and hand pop out. Like,
Oh, I still can't sleep with closet doors open, man.
I know, that's why I usually have mine like hooked up to my camo jacket so it stays closed. Anyway,
Yeah.
enough about the logistics of my doors.
There was also a nice touch in here, though. They're trying to radio Matt. Did you notice Matt really wasn't answering?
Not really.
While he
Why
was still
wasn't
there.
he?
Well, while he was still there at his station before he goes missing, he's not answering. And then later on, he comes up and goes, "Can't you guys hear me calling you on the radio?"
Oh, okay. So
So it was like,
they're messing with the communications.
Yeah, there's all these little subtle things that set up good scares, actually.
Yeah, I like that you're picking up on all this stuff.
Which is, again, kind of just what I want. Like, I can poke holes in the characters, and like, maybe the pacing isn't great and it is kind of paint by numbers, but it just gives some fun scares, I think. I actually think the first half is actually kind of the stronger half of the movie. While I do like the ending, it just feels a little bit like a different movie compared to the first half.
And I see why you say that too. We go from subtlety, almost psychological kind of stuff, into just here's a ghost.
Yeah, exactly. But we're gonna assume that Matt is dead meat when he says, "I'll be right back," when he goes to get the camera.
Famous last words.
And but he's not. That was also a nice misdirect.
Is it later when they get him?
Yes, they find him later in a hospital gown and in his underwear, just like babbling nonsense.
Looking at the blood tub.
Yes. Oh, that blood tub scare was scary as hell,
That
dude.
was good. That was a really good one.
But I started looking at the camera and I'm seeing like, whoa, big jump from like 12:45 to 5:32 a.m. And I just figured that was like, oh shit, things are really gonna amp up now because we must be getting close to the end of the movie. And I'm like, wait, there's like an hour left of movie. How are we already at 5:32 if they're gonna be let out at 6 a.m.? Which I know, like in found footage, like the expectation is everyone's gonna die. You know, otherwise it's not found footage, but they're doing
All that
that.
we found was the camera.
Exactly. But they're doing that because whatever happens in this hospital, like time is kind of irrelevant there. Because later on it'll be like 8:30 and the sun's not up, it's still dark.
Yeah, I mean that goes back into what we were talking about before with like the room changing and stuff. Like, yeah, time doesn't apply in this building or whatever realm they may have entered into.
Yeah, it's a really cool like psychological element where like the time is kind of irrelevant, the hospital is able to change layout, people are slowly losing their sanity. Like again, I would just expect like a scary ghost story, but there was a lot more going on here that made this really creepy.
Yeah, I'm liking this more the more you talk about it.
It had a lot going for it, man. And then another big jump scare, TC's kind of walking around looking for Matt after he disappeared, and there was a good jump scare where he was like looking down the stairs, and then there's a loud thud, and he got pushed down the stairs. and then probably the biggest reveal of the changing layout is we saw earlier on when they first walked in, somebody had like spray painted "Death Awaits" on the front doors, and they're walking around, and that painted text is now on the inside of the building facing them.
Again, another little thing that just adds to it.
Yeah, it's, and again, the fact that they're filming in like an actual hospital and making that look as good as it does, I'm like, damn, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, for sure.
But did you, as we're seeing things kind of unfold, and we know where the ending's going, do you feel like it's pretty cohesive in your mind? I know I said I feel like it's a little disjointed, but do you think it kind of builds up nicely to where we're going to go with the ending reveal?
Yeah, I think it does. Like I said, I can see where you're coming from because the whole time it's been almost going back to it, almost like a paranormal activity movie where we're not really seeing the ghosts, we're just seeing these different little occurrences here and there that may or may not be paranormal. And then when we do get the payoff and the ghosts do come out and start attacking and everything, it's I can see how that's jarring, but I don't know. I think there was a good build-up because if you remember when they try to sleep and they wake up and now they have the like hospital wristbands on and just all the little
Yes.
stuff that's building up to the big reveal, I thought worked in its favor.
Yeah, maybe it's just because at the end they go quite big with it, whereas everything else is pretty subtle.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
But yes, the hospital wristband thing was also very eerie when they show that. I also thought really good practical effects in the movie for the most part, where they're all like hunkered down in the lobby building when they realize that time is kind of irrelevant, so they all stay together. You know,
And
and they're like,
And why couldn't they get out? Did that guy just never come back?
Yeah, they kept waiting for 6 a.m. for Kenny to come back, and then like the time just got all weird and they could never, he never made it back.
Ugh.
Which made me wonder. I wondered if maybe there was going to be like another weird cult thing with this, where like sometimes these movies, like the townspeople are in on it.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad it didn't do
Me too. Did you wonder though if
that.
maybe the guy that was supposed to get him like purposely left him there?
Oh, honestly, I thought the ghost just got him. Seems like the most straightforward explanation. Maybe he did come back to unlock and got sucked up into the attic or something.
Well, you know, later on we're gonna see like these people just kind of go up in smoke in some ways. So, like,
Yeah.
are they just kind of transported away to another dimension?
That's what I was wondering. Where the hell do they go?
I don't know. But once they.
Smoke rolls in and they're gone.
It
Son
was
of a
very
bitch.
Silent Hill in that way.
Yeah.
But once they realize it's past 8 a.m., they all just kind of hunker into a room. Kind of nice practical effect when the filming light just like fell very slowly and crashed on the floor and woke them all up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, these weird time jumps where like Lance is like, so TC just went to get a sandwich and they opened a cooler. Oh, I almost vomited when I saw the rotting food with the maggots in it.
Pretty gross.
That was really, really disgusting.
Yeah.
And then they're looking for a plan, and I'm just writing like, are they really going to try and leave and just hope their lights and cameras don't run out of battery? Like
Well, I
they're.
mean, good.
No, you can go ahead.
I was just gonna say at that point, that would kind of be the last thing on my mind.
I don't know what I would do in this scenario, man. I'd probably just go catatonic. Like, I've given up, man. I've given up.
It's Kevin. He just stares at the wall now.
Yeah. There's also a point I just wrote, oh, that ghostly moan was so creepy. I think at just one point they're looking for a way out and there's like a moan in the distance.
Okay.
Simple but effective.
Yeah.
And then again, really impressive set design when they're trying to go up to the roof, because they tr I'll give them this. They don't just sit around. They try everything.
Yeah, that was good.
They try to break through the front door. They can't go there. They do try to go to the caves. They can't find their way there. They do try to go up to the roof, and there's like another wall there that wasn't there before. Just again.
I forgot about the caves. I was for sure that's where they were gonna end up.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out maybe halfway through, 'cause they spent so much time exploring there in the beginning that I was like,
Yeah.
"Oh, we're gonna end up in the caves."
Did they go to the caves or were they just in like a basement thing?
Well, Lance and Sasha end up in the cave. Most everybody else is kind of done by then.
Yeah. Okay, so they were in the caves at the end.
Yes, they were under
Okay.
the hospital.
Okay.
But again, simple effects, man. Something about distant screams is a really chilling effect. And when they're hearing all those little screams from like the dark hallways, and then like a bed frame just gets picked up and thrown. Like, it's a pretty claustrophobic, eerie movie for the most part.
That's a good point too, the claustrophobia of it just being locked in, you know, without ghosts.
Yeah. Again,
Do
I
you get
think,
claustrophobic?
not to my knowledge officially, but I also don't really put myself in scenarios where I would feel claustrophobic, so hard to tell.
Yeah,
I know my mom is very claustrophobic.
I think I'm the same way. I'm never really in like small rooms or anything.
Fair
I'll go
enough.
lock myself in my closet for a couple hours and see what happens.
Yeah. At one point, they also jump ahead too, and Sasha has a very bloody hello written on her back.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty
That's
fucking grueling,
good.
man. That was hard to
No.
look at. And yeah, I mean, again, it's just a series of scares, but like, I mean, that's what we watch these movies for. They also try to radio Matt after he disappears, and you can kind of hear his voice coming through. And I think I heard him say, "I'm so cold,"
Oh geez.
that I thought that was pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But probably one of the most iconic scares was TC is exploring, and right behind him, a girl in a hospital gown runs across the hallway.
Oh yeah.
And then they follow her into a room and are just staring at her, and she turns around and then her face distorts. That was a nice little scare. There's our cover right there.
I think it was around that time too where and they're like running all around, and the one ghost hand bursts through that window and a door and grabs Sasha.
Somewhere around there, yeah. Was that the door scene you were talking about?
Yeah, I didn't see that coming at all. I'm like, oh shit, that was good. And then whenever, what is it, Matt, he's just staring down at the blood tub.
Yes.
And then that thing just comes up and grabs one of them.
Oh, that was
What?
gnarly. That's the end of TC too, man. That was
We never
wild.
see him again.
I was
Yeah.
gonna say, I know you don't really get affected by jump scares, but like, did any of these get you, or were you bothered by the jump scares? Like, what was your take on the scares here?
I thought they were good and well done. I won't say I jumped. I was kind of like, oh damn, at a couple of these, like the door, the blood tub. When they turn around and they see that like ghost patient standing in the ceiling or whatever, he's up there like Spider-Man, and the face is
Oh, that was a
like
great scare. Yeah, it's
rah.
Lance is walking into a room when they're trying to find a way out, and he sees a bloody tongue on the floor.
The tongue, yeah.
Again, good effects, but then yeah, a couple blood drips, and he slowly looks up, and then there's one clinging to the wall. Oh, that was nice.
Yep, I thought, yeah, like I said, the second half of this movie is what I really enjoyed, was seeing all the different ghosts and everything and the payoff to everything we've been witnessing the past hour or whatever.
There's
And then,
also a really subtle point where like all the cell doors open up, so you kind of get the like the implication that all the inmates are loose.
yeah, I like the ending too, where it's kind of like a three-part ending, but he goes into the basement, and here's here's something I wanted to ask you. Now, when he's down in those catacombs or tunnels or whatever, he finds all the anatomy, biology stuff, but then he also finds his book with a bunch of runes written in it. So, were they practicing the occult, and that's why this place is so haunted and so weird, or is it just the energy from this being like a mental asylum where they do fucked up shit?
I don't know. Like when you read the plot summary, it says that there was like a satanic ritual altar or whatever there, and like
Oh, really?
that's what he found with the book, and like
Okay.
the because you see an upside down cross there too.
I must have missed
Now
that. I was too busy with the runes.
was that the doctor though that did that? I'm not sure. I kind of wonder if maybe people started doing that later. Because we do have the ghost of Friedkin, but he looks pretty human, but then the inmates are kind of like not human.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. The inmates look like almost zombie-like with the sunken eyes and weird mouths.
And earlier Houston, like even though he was fake, the writing was like, I sense a lot of spirits here, but I also sense something that's not human or something evil or whatever,
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's where I talk about like it gets a little disjointed at the end there, where it's like, not that I need everything explained to me, but it's kind of like that part of the movie feels a little detached to what we were watching before.
Yeah, because it's like they didn't go all the way with any kind of occult stuff to have some of that at the end. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
Yeah.
so focused on it being a mental hospital and all this that whenever you see the upside down cross and Book of Runes, it does feel a bit out of place.
Yeah. Not to the point of
No.
ruining the movie, but yeah, it is very like, well, which way
I think
are
if
you
it was
going?
gonna, I think if it was gonna be that minor, don't even mention it. Just say, hey, this was a mental asylum. A lot of horrible shit happened here, and the energy is still here.
Yeah.
Done. You don't need all the satanic stuff.
I did like the dialogue though of when they find Matt and he's in a hospital gown in his underwear. And he starts saying things like, "We can all leave as soon as we're better." I thought that was kind of a neat thing.
It seems to be a recurring theme because at the end, the last guy standing when he encounters the doctor and they're trying to kidnap him or whatever, he's like, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. So I wonder too if maybe there was a hint of, I don't know, maybe something like they were all losing their minds or, I mean, obviously we see them deteriorate mentally, but I'm just saying like, I don't know. It made me wonder if there was something more to it. Like maybe Matt's not the TV host of this show. Maybe he is just like a crazy person or whatever. I don't think it's that deep.
Yeah, but there is
But
an element of like, with the villains in particular, like, was this the doctor doing this stuff that we see with the altar and
yeah.
rituals? Was that somebody else that came in after the history of the place and made the energy negative? Like,
I don't think it was exactly positive beforehand.
no, not at all. So
Well,
you
here's something to think about too, is you mentioned how the patient ghosts, they don't look human. But keep in mind, we're all seeing this through audiovisual equipment, which we talked about before, how they can mess with that. So maybe it's the ghosts distorting their faces in this.
Yeah, maybe.
I could start getting real out there with the theories behind this one. I actually don't have a cohesive one. I'm just kind of picking up on stuff. And I'm like, I wonder if there's more to that.
Well, I think that's one of the other things too that's a little bit of a weakness of the movie is there's a lot of ideas being thrown out.
Throw
Like,
everything at the wall.
is it an evil entity? Is it an evil doctor? Is it just ghosts? Is it a psychological thing? I feel like there's a lot of breadcrumbs for a lot of different things, and the writing tends to fall a little short as the movie goes on, and they try to go bigger and louder with everything.
Yeah.
But I'm also not thinking it's one of those movies where you have to think that much about it, because
Right.
all the while, to wrap up like what happens to the rest of the characters, Houston gets killed by a spirit of some sort that we actually don't see. Remember, he got lifted up and choked and then just got thrown like across the hallway after a blast of light or something.
Yeah.
And they find Matt, and Matt's just delirious. They find that tub again and it's filled with blood, and then TC just gets pulled into the tub.
God, that would suck.
God, that was a nice jump scare. That scared the shit out of me.
I'd rather just have my neck broken and thrown across the room. I don't want to know where the blood tub goes.
Yeah. But then creepy as hell when Matt picks up the camera with slight blood on his face and just is there laughing as they're trying to figure out what happened to TC. And then Matt just throws himself down an elevator shaft.
That's a good old-fashioned way.
Yeah, they were definitely, they tried everything. They weren't like total like, dumb horror characters. They were
Yeah.
trying stuff. I mean, I was like, I'm not climbing down the elevator shaft in the dark, but you
Oh, hell
guys
no.
go for it. But yeah, they open the elevator shaft with a crowbar of some sort. Or it wasn't even like a crowbar, it was like a beam of steel or something. And there was another scare that happened around there. But they open up the elevator and then the camera drops on the floor as Sasha and Lance are being attacked, and then Lance, or not Lance, Matt just like falls down the shaft.
God, that would suck.
Pretty creepy close up where it's just his face like looking dead and bloodied on the base on the top of the elevator.
Now, was it Sasha that just gets like sucked up by the smoke?
Yes. Oh, the blood, that's was the scare that happened. The bloody tongue happened when Lance went to go look for the steel beam to open the door.
Okay.
But the best jump scare in the movie that I don't want to skip over is Lance, I believe, is trying to go back to the elevator. But he's walking down a hallway and he goes to like take a picture or
Okay.
like flash a light or something so he can see. And as soon as he flashes it, this actually made me jump like so badly. He flashes a light or a camera or something and a patient's running at him from the darkness.
Oh, yeah.
That scared the shit out of me. Like, I was not expecting that at all.
There is definitely some good stuff in this movie for sure.
Yeah. And so it leads to the dark tunnels. And yeah, so all the while, Sasha got like a fever or something.
I totally missed that.
Yeah, she got, you didn't see her vomiting up blood?
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, earlier on, she was laying against the wall with Lance, and Lance, like, she's like, I don't feel good. And Lance is like, well, yeah, you have a fever. So she just got sick all of a sudden, and then she's vomiting up blood, and then Lance is like, she's not going to make it. So she just gets some mysterious illness and then gets sucked away by the smoke. She does kind of have a lame death.
Yeah, the mysterious illness. We can't think anything for Sasha. Ill.
Mysterious illness, and then she gets sucked away by a cloud of smoke.
Yeah, I did think that was kind of fucking lame, especially compared to some of the other crazy shit we saw, and then she just kind of gets lofted away.
And then it's just Lance, and his flashlight is dying, and there's an EVP where he asks like what they want, and it's just noises and screams. And we don't know how long he's been wandering, but there are lines of dialogue where they would say like, "We slept for about 7 hours and it's still dark out." And so Lance is just wandering these tunnels, but all of a sudden his psyche is just broken. This is before he
Yeah.
finds like the altar and the research stuff.
This is when he's eating rats.
Oh, this was disgusting. Oh, this
Rats
was
off
so,
to you.
oh, this was so nasty, dude. He takes like a, what is he holding? It's like a bar and he smashes a rat and then just eats it raw. And I'm like, well, if the ghosts don't kill you, then the fucking disease in the rat is gonna kill you.
The bubonic plague is back, and we found patient zero. This rat eating
Oh,
full over here.
again, well done effects, but oh, that was so disgusting.
It did look really good when he ate that rat.
Yeah, good as in like convincing practical effects, not
Yeah.
like tasty.
Yeah. Well, to each their own.
Okay, well, Roy, well, I'm just gonna be catatonic. You go eat the bubonic plague rats when we're stuck in a hospital, okay?
This actually seems like what would happen. You'd
Yep.
be catatonic, I'd be the maniac eating fucking rodents.
But then after he finds the altar, he's in the doctor's office. And I don't know if I saw this right, but it looks like the patient photos included TC and his friends.
Oh, that'd be a good touch if they did.
I'd have to go
We'll
back and
say
watch
they
it, but
did.
that's what it looked like to me.
Okay.
And I thought that was super creepy, but then yeah, we see I feel like we just watched this shot in House on Haunted Hill
I
with the whole
know.
like the doctors are there at the table and they look up at him.
Yes, it did feel very familiar.
I was like, we just watched this a couple weeks ago. But kind of creepy where, the doctors bring him to the table and he's just like, "No, I'm not crazy. I'm fine."
Yeah.
And then we get the Blair Witch moment of, I guess he got lobotomized and he said, "I'm all better now and I can leave." And then the camera just cuts off.
Yeah.
Which does lead me to believe, like, is he actually dead?
It doesn't seem like it. I thought the sequel would be like people go in there looking for him.
Well, I looked at the credits. It says the guy that plays Lance Preston is there as Lance Preston in some way, so. But it
Well, now
also
that
says there as himself too. So I wonder if he's playing his character or the
I'm
actor
Brad
behind his
Paxton. I
character.
played Lance. Oh, God.
But that's the end.
Kind of really want to see Grave Encounters 2 now.
You gotta check it out, man. I think it's also on Tubi. I'll have to look,
Oh, it
but
is. It
all right.
certainly
There you
is.
go. Oh, that's right, because you said it started playing. But that's it, man. That's the end of Grave Encounters. The camera cuts off, and like I said, not perfect by any means. It's definitely got some flaws, but a pretty solid ghost flick. Just a 90-minute spooky ghost story, some good scares, pretty decent acting for the most part, and a creepy setting with good effects and doing a lot with not much. So, would I watch this again, like by myself? Probably not, but I would put this on like with friends or at a party or something, like around Halloween time.
Yeah, definitely, because I always like watching the ghost shows around then, so this would be perfect for that. But yeah, I don't really have much to add other than what you just said.
It does get a little hokey. The part I skipped over because I didn't really have anything to say about it. This was just the one part that I was like, eh, this seems a little not all that great. When all of the hands started coming out of the walls.
Oh, I forgot about
That
that.
was a little corny, but not bad.
Yeah, it's a mid ghost movie and it's enjoyable. So
Yeah.
I like it more after talking with you though and hearing about all the little different stuff I missed.
Yeah, there's definitely some good things to praise here. It's just don't go in with like the highest of expectations, but I think it's a fun little spooky watch. And again, I would watch it like in a group of friends or for Halloween or something.
Here's what I find most impressive, especially because when we get to horror news and talk about some of these budgets, stupid money. Again, just unfathomable amounts of money. $120,000 to make this thing.
I know, isn't that crazy? I'm actually impressed by that too.
Right? And it's a fine ghost movie. Nothing looks terrible. The acting isn't just garbage. Like, you made a decent little movie for not much money, so mad respect to that.
Yeah. So yeah, should we jump into horror news?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
So I think the last time we did horror news, we were talking about some of the three biggest horror releases so far this year.
Yep.
And I have updates on those because I wanted to follow them, see how they did. It's a mixed bag.
Okay. I'm sure.
It's a mixed bag, predominantly negative.
Okay.
So I think it's safe to say primate. I'm picking up
Primate.
battles. Primate might. I think it's safe to say that Primate has did its run in theaters. It made $36 million worldwide on a $21 million budget, and I am most blown away that a killer chimp movie got $21 million to
I
be made.
know.
Who is making these decisions?
Well, you gotta watch it, man, and you'll find out where that $21 went. It actually went to a pretty good movie, so.
All the gore effects.
Yeah, so like not too bad. Depends on how much money they spend on the marketing campaign.
Well, according to, I don't know, this was just kind of shit I saw. I have sources in the other ones. But according to things I saw, it needed 45 million to be profitable and it came up at 36. So
Damn.
crazy amount of money that I had.
I feel like that's gonna be one that, like I said with Grave Encounters, that more people watch at home.
That's what I'll probably do. I'll just stream it because I do want to see it after what you guys have all said about it.
Yeah, I think more people are probably going to track that one down at home rather than I got to run out to a theater to see it.
Right. 21 million. We just watched a movie that was made for six figures. Low six figures. 21 million?
Well, they would have to use a real chimp to make it for that little money, and they definitely don't want to do
God.
that, so.
Could you imagine? Here, go crazy.
No.
I just always go back to, oh man, the guy who directed Older Gods or Elder Gods that we talked to.
Yes, I know who you're talking about. I just blanked on
Yeah.
his name.
And he says, like, these young filmmakers are like, oh, I want $1 million budget movie and all that. He's like, dude, do you know how much $1 million is? I'm like,
I know.
you can make a decent movie for like 100 grand. Like, we don't need to
Dude,
put Optimus Prime in it.
Elder Gods felt more big budget than Grave Encounters did.
It did, yeah.
And I think it was made for less. I can't remember, but that one feels more large scale than Grave Encounters does.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot with Elder Gods too was, first of all, they come from like a TV background. I believe they did advertisements before they made that. But I
Yep.
think too, what, 10-ish years later, the camera equipment is just so much better. It's not shot like a found footage film. Because I just remember watching Older Gods that it was just so nice to look at. I'm like,
Or,
man.
sorry, yeah, you had it right. Older gods. I said it wrong. My bad.
Elder, something like that.
I said Elder Gods. Older Gods. This is
Okay.
the name of the movie. But yeah,
Yes.
shout out to them at Wagyu Films. Older Gods is so good, man. I hope people are watching
I
that.
know. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see what else those guys do. But anyway, yeah, that just always stuck with me. How he's like, I'm a filmmaker. I don't need $10 million to make a movie.
That's one of my favorite interviews we did. Talking to him and Chris from Killer Content, those are like two awesome filmmakers.
For sure. All right, here's one many have been talking about, not for the right reasons. Return to Silent Hill. You
Oh,
been hearing
man.
anything about this piece?
Yes, and nothing good.
So it's on.
I've heard from Reviewed to Death that they saw it, but I think Marcus said Luke was ready to kill him after they watched it.
I've heard it's bad. I've heard it's bonkers. But basically, it's on track to be the biggest bomb in franchise history.
Dude, that sucks to hear, but I still want to see it. And
I do too.
I talked to somebody who actually knows somebody who worked on the practical effects for that, or special effects for it, or whatever. And they were really excited to work on it. And then, like a year later, after they were filming it, the person said, "Like, nah, man, they're destroying it in pre-pro." So, studios,
That sucks.
yeah, studios, stop doing that.
So according to IGN, it's made 19.3 million at the worldwide box office. Kevin, would you like to take a guess how much this thing made in North America?
In North America by itself?
In North America by itself. Out of 19 million worldwide, how much came from North America?
2 million.
Close.
Oh
3 million.
my God, that is so bad, dude. Yeah, not hearing good things about that one, but I still want to see it. I don't care.
I did too. And by the way, these numbers are coming from IGN. And now you might be saying to yourself, well, we just had a big snowstorm. Many parts of the country had an ice storm. Maybe people just aren't going to the theaters. But the people who have seen it, let me tell you about the scores. 4.2 on IMDb. Not bad. 29% Fandango. And my favorite, 18% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Dude, here's the thing, man. You're at a disadvantage though whenever you create a video game movie. I'm
Oh,
willing to
yeah.
bet that when I watch that, I'm going to have those reviews in my head and I'm going to hear people say it's one of the worst movies of the year, and I'm probably going to disagree.
Yeah. Well, what do you think it is about video game movies that don't click? Because, I mean, ever since, what, Mario Brothers in like 1990, there's never really been a decent video game adaptation.
I don't know, man. Video games are hard to translate into film, I guess. And people have a
Seems
very
like it.
specific, like, many hours with a video game tied to, like, their memory and their nostalgia and stuff. So when you try to convert it into a film for 90 minutes and you can't use, like, the story from the game most of the time because it doesn't work for a film,
Yeah.
you have to change the game, and people like familiarity. So
I
I
think
guess
part of
that would be
it's
my answer.
I think part of it is also the clothing. You ever notice that?
Oh yeah.
Like I especially noticed it with the Cowboy Bebop from anime to live action TV show translation. Anytime you try to dress somebody up like a video game character, they just look like real shitty cosplay.
I think the best video game movie, to my knowledge, the first Silent Hill's up there, but I think that first Mortal Kombat is probably the best version of a video game.
Yeah,
So.
definitely. I think too, a lot of people didn't like that one because Mortal Kombat was known as like the blood and guts game, and that was just more of a almost like a family-friendly kung fu movie.
Oh,
But I
dude,
think
it's pretty brutal though. If people think it's family friendly, they should go back and rewatch it. It's pretty fucked.
well, I mean, compared to like the video games where you're ripping out people's spines and
Yeah,
shit.
whatever. The graphics were so bad back then that, like, whatever, man.
Dude, that ending fight where Shang Tsung gets impaled on the fucking Mortal
The
Kombat
spikes on the
logo.
floor.
Dude, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, great
Did you see
soundtrack, too.
that guy died not too long ago, the one who played Shang Tsung.
Yeah, that was really sad. I can't pronounce his name, but yeah, rest in peace, man. Way too many celebrities dying. We just lost Catherine O'Hara, too.
Oh yeah, that's right. Kevin's mom
Oh, that's
from
so
Home
sad.
Alone.
Yep. And also Lydia's one of her parents from Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I do remember that. God damn.
Oh, that's so sad.
All right, we're gonna end on a slightly more positive note. This one is about 28 years later, The Bone Temple, which I know you've
Yep.
seen, so
Just
feel
watched
free.
it.
All right, so finally, a little bit of good news. So Screen Rant says, while it hasn't yet made its budget back yet, it has crossed the $50 million threshold at the box office. So right now, The Bone Temple has made $53 million on a $63 million budget. Which, again, $63 million just blows my mind. But anyway, this is going to, or this brings into question as to whether we'll get a third movie, because that's really dependent upon the success of these first two.
Well, yeah, I really liked Bone Temple actually quite a bit. I did not see the first 28 years later, so I was a little lost with some of the character connections, but for the most part, it worked well for a standalone movie. But it definitely set up for a sequel, which is what I'll say. Yeah, I don't know what it is, man. Why these first three movies really that people aren't turning out to. I actually feel like jumping ahead, the movie that came out after those three is the one that people are now flocking to, which is Sam Raimi's Send Help, which it sounds like me and you and the boys are going to see this weekend.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I don't know. I just, a sequel and then kind of an original animal movie and then a video game movie, like not big draws, I don't think. But I don't think the first 28 years later did like gangbusters either, if I remember.
I think that was like we were talking about with Grave Decisions, Grave Encounters.
Yeah.
I think that was like that where it had a lot of following post theatrical run. Because
Yeah,
that's when I'd heard about it, like after it was out of theaters.
I almost wonder if 28 years later was just too little too late. Like the fans of that franchise have kind of moved on because the 28 weeks later was like what, 07 or something?
Yeah.
Like it was a long time before that next one came out.
I think that's a big part of it. The time has come and gone, This
Yeah, it
these
might be the same thing with the Silent Hill ones, man. I mean, the last Silent Hill movie was 2012.
And before a couple years ago, the last Silent Hill video game was around 2012, so I mean, I think too, Silent Hill was always like the little brother to Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You're not gonna blow any kind of record with a Silent Hill movie, especially when you have a new Resident Evil movie coming out.
Isn't that
I'm
weird? Like that Silent Hill is not like a big draw compared to Resident Evil. It's kind of weird to think about.
I think what's weird is that the Silent Hill story that's told in the games translates so much better to a horror movie than the Resident Evil's.
Yeah.
Not necessarily action, but like the psychological horror behind it, you could do some really cool stuff with in movies,
Well,
and they
for
just don't.
fucking six movies, they were terrified to turn Resident Evil into a horror movie. They just wanted it to be another
I
Matrix.
know. Yeah.
Johannes Roberts gave us the best Resident Evil movie of Welcome to Raccoon City, in my mind.
That was good. I also liked how just off the fucking wall some of those other ones were, like the one with Nemesis and Afterlife. Those were pretty cool.
Yeah, they're entertaining, but they're entirely not Resident Evil.
No, not at all. Dude, that first one, I was so let down when I saw that, but
Yeah,
anyway.
that one I thought was decent when I watched it, and then I watched it later. I'm like, no, this is pretty bad. But I do love Mila Jovovich in them.
But yeah, I wonder too. My God, excuse me, I wish I had a cough button on here. Think about the zombie craze also. Like we kind of brought it back there in the early mid 2000s and 2010s with Dawn of the Dead, 28 years later, Walking Dead, all huge franchises back then.
Yep.
I'm wondering too, not only is it probably just too much time has passed, but are we kind of over zombies right now?
I feel like we are, man. I don't know what's really hot in horror right now, to be honest. I don't know what the big draw in horror is anymore. It's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, because you have something like Terrifier, which is just this like brutal grinding slasher film, and then you have something like Sinners, that was one of the biggest movies last year. It's kind of like a vampire flick, so
Weapons.
Weapons, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the big draw in horror is right now, so I guess time will tell. But I feel like I'm hearing a lot of buzz about Send Help with Sam Raimi coming back to the box office, so
Now, did he do any work with the newer Evil Deads?
he might have been some sort of producer credit. I know he had a heavy hand in the 2013 remake.
Okay.
Where like it was absolutely done by Fede Alvarez or whatever his name is,
Yeah.
but Sam Raimi was very involved with like as a partner to make sure it was true to what came before. Did he have that much involvement in Evil Dead Rise? I'm not sure. And I have no idea if he's attached to Evil Dead Burn or is that what the new name is for the next Evil Dead? Evil Dead Burn?
That is a wonderful question.
That's what I'm hearing, so I don't know if it's accurate or not.
Yeah, that's everything I have with horror news. Just wanted to give you a box office update.
Okay, man. Well, this is our last episode before we go live in Columbus, Ohio. So we'll do plugs real quick and get on out of here, but I'm gonna put this out a couple days before the shows. So if you're in Columbus, Ohio or somewhere close by and you want to come check out the show, we got a lot of cool stuff going on. Reviewed to Death will be there on Saturday. Creepy Crowley, Zach will be there both days. Mark Anthony Brownlee will be there on Friday. Mama Midnight's coming out. Me and Roy will be there. We got two different themes, horror trivia, two live interactive podcast episodes for both. I think, some of our horror author people there will be giving away some books potentially as prizes. Probably going to give away some guest spots on the podcast. It's just going to be a good ass time, man. I know it's cold, but come on inside, warm up with a beer, and come talk some horror with us. It's really going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to it. So, Roy, in the meantime, where can they check out your books and your socials?
Absolutely. You can find my books. They are all on Amazon. Just search my name, R. Jacob Honeybrook. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok at author underscore Honeybrook. And go read my weekly column on tbmhorror.com called The Honeycut.
All right. And you can also, by the way, find Roy's articles linked in the description of the episode for TBM Horror. So please be sure to go check out TBM Horror and Roy's articles, The Honeycut. And then finally, if you want to get in touch with the Midnight Terrors podcast, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok under MTP Charleston. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com with your movie picks and topic ideas for the show. Or let us know what you think of the movies we discuss. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our Linktree, which has all of our socials on there, as well as our T Public store if you want to pick up some merch. You can join our Facebook group called Midnight Terrors Podcast, where you can talk horror with us and all of our friends and family. It's a good time. And finally, this coming weekend, we are live, the Midnight Terrors Podcast, on Friday, February 6th. We are at Noctera Brewing, the Powell location, from 7 to 10 for some ghost horror. And then on Saturday, February 7th, we are, I said, did I say February 6th or 7th on that last one?
Sixth.
Okay, good. Yes, February 6th is when we're at Noctera. Okay. I am tired. And then Saturday, February 7th, we will be at Seventh Son Brewing for Slasher Saturday. It is going to be a good time. Admission is free. Just come on out, grab some beer and some food, and let's hang. But this is the Midnight Terrors Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you again soon. Peace.
Thank you.